Welcome to the Amazon Legends Podcast, where we have real stories about making it big on Amazon. Our guests are CEOs of large companies and entrepreneurs who became powerful sellers, also experts specializing in helping sellers, and both former and current Amazon employees who will give us an insight from behind the scenes. Here's your host, Nick Urison.
Welcome to another episode of Amazon Legends. My next guest today is a U.S. Air Force man turned commercial pilot turned entrepreneur. And we'll hear from him, his experience in a second. But he's been in e-commerce for over two decades, and he's an eight-figure Amazon seller, many SKUs, private labels. So he's done it all. He's the founder of createprofits.online mastermind. And so everybody, meet my guest, Todd Snively. Welcome to the show, Todd.
Hey, Nick. It's my real privilege to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for being here. We have a lot to learn from you. Being the teaching the mastermind class, well, that's it. I've never had a mastermind coach before, so this is great. So you have a winning strategy to be wildly successful in online sales. And it's a very interesting one I haven't heard before. So tell us what that is.
Well, a long time ago, I learned that you really need to diversify, especially when I got involved with e-commerce. I found that not only would I want to be on the major marketplaces, but you'd want to have your own website too, because you can't always depend on anybody else. So as long as you have the most control over what's going on, the better of your chances of having long-term sustainable success.
So you are advocating for not only launching in one channel, but also on your website, right?
Correct. I think, yeah, the more control you have over whether it's your own brand or just the technical side of things also goes a long way towards long-term success.
So my general, so first of all, you know how it is. One size never fits all, and everybody's circumstances are different. So let's study that from the standpoint of circumstances, let's say. Someone who's just starting. This is a brand new seller. So launching on Amazon and launching on your website. Would you recommend that?
I think you want to get a website up and running. And there's a lot of things that you can be doing while you're launching on a major marketplace. For example, just starting a blog and having articles on a website that are demographically specific to what you're doing on the large marketplace is going to eventually help you anyway. And it's also something you can monetize outside of even just physical products with advertising and affiliate offers and things like that. But if someone's going to start off on a marketplace, to me, it makes a lot of sense just to get a website going at the same time.
So, but it's a different thing you are advocating. I like that idea. You're not talking about selling through your website. You're talking about putting up a website and then building content that can ultimately drive traffic to wherever you want, right?
Exactly. Not only that, but it can be monetized all in of itself. I'll give you another perfect example. You know, Amazon has this program. By the way, there's lots of ways to make money on Amazon, but they have something called Amazon Influencer. So if you have a website that has followers or traffic, you can actually apply to become an Amazon Influencer and get paid through their Amazon Associates program. All of this is possible, maybe just because you decided to start a website a couple of years ago while you were doing e-commerce.
Oh, I see. So this, you would, as an influencer, obviously you would drive traffic to other Amazon listings.
Correct. An influencer on Amazon actually makes videos for pretty much any product they want to review. You know, a how-to, an unboxing, a product review video. But because they're an influencer, it gets shown right up there with all of the other images, the main images of the product. So an influencer video is going to be right there, and they're earning commissions when people are watching and purchasing items on Amazon that way as an influencer. But you're never going to get that opportunity if you don't start with some sort of either social following or website following.
Okay, so I think the magic word I just heard you say is social following. So that's the key, right? So at the end of the day, for anybody listening, what I'm hearing from you is, I've never heard this before. Go set up your salary account, but set up a website and build social following and sign up to be an Amazon influencer that gets you into what you need to do as far as bringing success and traffic to your own listings, but also it gets you into the Amazon ecosystem, gets you to become a contributor to the Amazon system. And at the same time, you build a following, which you can then leverage to drive traffic to your own listings.
Would that 1,000%. 1,000%. And this is a lot of thing. This is something that private label sellers, they give it like half a thought. Sometimes, you know, if they're building a really good brand, they're going to get their own branded website going. But I would say that no matter what level of success you're experiencing, you got to get that branded website going, especially if you're doing private label. If you're just doing wholesale, your website's going to have a whole different kind of flavor to it. But the whole purpose is to be building your list, getting that social following, and being able to take advantage of all of the different ways to monetize the fact that you're in e-commerce. It's not just one thing. It's just not selling products on Amazon.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, we are 6 minutes into our recording, and already, you know, you've given so many good ideas for people. This is great. Because most of the times what I hear people say is, oh, you know, we're launching on our website first and we'll do Amazon next. So they spend all that money putting up a website, which gets no traffic, obviously. So instead of doing all that, this is a much, much better strategy. It gets you making money through being the influencer program, gets you into the whole ecosystem, and still you will have your website. Yeah, and you know, you don't care about selling through your website because it's a fulfillment operation.
You know what, Nick? It's kind of funny because the people that start the website first but don't want to sell on Amazon, the single reason that I hear most of the time is they don't want to pay the 15% commission to Amazon. Yeah. So I ask them, I said, well, how are you going to get traffic to your website? Oh, paid ads. So, do you understand that you're going to probably pay a lot more than 15% of your sales to get traffic to a brand new website that nobody's heard of? And, you know, then I think the light bulbs start to go off. Amazon's all about traffic. Everybody complains. I've heard like 900,000 different complaints about selling on Amazon. But the fact of the matter is they bring you the traffic. It's their sandbox. They make the rules, right?
You know, you say traffic, I say something else. And this is not tomato, tomato. They bring qualified buyers, right? I mean, you know, you go put a banner on, if you like, a porn site that gets a lot of traffic, and you get some of the traffic. That's traffic, right?
Right.
But in this case, they're bringing you qualified buyers. Imagine getting that by paying on Google.
It's so funny because anytime somebody does a search on Amazon, that is a buying keyword. They're entering into the search results. They're not like just kind of tootling around, to your point, the internet. They want to buy stuff. And boy, do they buy. It's amazing. Yeah. I mean, just on Prime Days alone, we see this huge bump in sales. We don't do anything special for Prime Day, but we see maybe a 30% bump in sales just because of the increased traffic. It's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. So tell me your take on something I advocate for. So what I tell people is, you want to put up your website and you want to put your products up on your website when you launch on Amazon, go ahead, do that. It's okay. You know, with your idea, I wouldn't even bother with that, but doesn't matter. Let's say that become an influencer, put up your blog, create your social following, and put up your products on your website. But I tell them, do not have add to cart to check out for you to fulfill those orders that may come from the website. Instead, link your add to cart to the Amazon listing and have Amazon do the fulfillment.
Absolutely. You know, that Amazon has the multi-channel fulfillment program. So any inventory that you have at an FBA facility can be automatically fulfilled from most shopping carts.
Well, you're referring to integrating with Amazon's. I'm not even talking about that. I'm making it even more practical. I'm saying, forget the multi-channel fulfillment. All I'm saying is that add to cart button is symbolic, that simply you can have one of those URLs that will add the piece, number of pieces that you know you can assign to the Amazon cart. In other words, send them to the listing and get them to buy on the listing itself.
I would actually debate you on that one a little bit.
let's debate it. Let's debate it, because I can argue both sides of it. So,
well, here's the thing. In my opinion, if somebody's actually on your website and willing to buy, you should make it a one-step checkout. Use something like a Bolt checkout or something like that. So literally, once they've decided they wanted to buy, boom, they're done. You know, their stored credit card somewhere is used and their shipping address is already in there and it's done. If you're having them actually go to Amazon at that point, even though the item's like in the cart there, they still have to make a decision as to, one, do they want to purchase something through Amazon? Not everybody's an Amazon fan, which is maybe one of the reasons why they were on your website in the first place. What we've seen is a huge convergence of Amazon buyers from Amazon to our website. Now, a lot of it has to do with the way we do our packaging and things like that. But the fact of the matter is once they hit the website, they're there for a specific reason. They want the brand experience, not the Amazon experience. So I'm thinking, if you're going to go to the trouble of putting up the website needs to be one of the selling features of the transaction. Now, if they trust Amazon and you send them to Amazon, maybe they just go, oh, okay. I just think it's a point of confusion, particularly. So to your point, even though you could do that, I still think a much better way is just to have the FBA inventory automatically fulfilled. The cost is pretty much about the same. The only thing you'll lose maybe is if they did it directly at Amazon, they get the two-day Prime if they have the Prime membership. With the multi-channel fulfillment, it might take a couple extra days to get there, but they expect that from a website anyway. But interesting idea. All right, so go ahead. Why do you think it's better to send them to Amazon?
I have plenty. So, okay, let's first go step by step. So brand experience. Brand experience is provided already all the way up to the checkout point. Now, the transactional experience is not really part of the brand experience. It is to the extent that, though, if you make it easy and one click and everything, they'll love it. Oh, great. You know, I don't have to worry about this. But as far as the perception about navigating through your site, finding the product, that's already been done. So the perception has been established at the point that they are about to check out. So I would say that you can really, if you like, make a deal on excluding the transactional experience from the brand experience that you provided and assume that that's good enough, provided that there are no surprises. So if you put a nice little disclaimer or a heads up or whatever, where their order will be completed on Amazon. These days, with 170 million Prime members, most people have Prime membership. So what you are giving them is, first of all, the Prime shipping, the speed and the protection and everything else. So that's from the customer standpoint. In fact, you may improve the conversion, because as you know, not every website behaves very well during checkout. You have shopping cart abandonments, blah blah blah. So with Amazon, you have a whole different thing. They can save it for later and things like that you may not be offering. That's the customer experience, but that is not my main benefit. I have two real elephants elephant size benefits sitting in the middle of the room. Number one, if you don't have to worry about fulfillment on your website, now your inventory management is completely by managing one location. That's the FBA location. You don't have to worry about how many pieces do I have at the 3PL, how many pieces, or if you have your own warehouse, in the warehouse and FBA reply. You don't have to worry about that. You just simply focus on how many pieces are selling, what is my sell-through rate, how many pieces do I have, and that's all you do, number one. Number two, elephant, is your rank. I mean, you're bringing more sales. So that's a huge deal, because as you increase the sell-through rate, that affects your rank. In addition, you can set up yourself as in the attribution, and then this is external traffic you're driving. And from external traffic that you drive, you get 10% of your sales back if you are brand registered. So when you combine that kind of a benefit, the 15% commission is the only argument against it. Hold on a minute. I've done everything. I generated the traffic. I sent the listing. And now I'm going to pay Amazon 15% on that sale. Excuse me. Fulfilling your own orders, isn't that costing you something? It is. So who cares? Depending on your price point, you know, that 15% may not be a big deal. So those would be my pro arguments, so to speak. So what do you think?
Well, I think if you're going to be setting up the website, the primary focus should be with the thought that if anything happens to my Amazon seller account, I need to be self-sustaining with the website. I think that's more important than any other benefit that a website could give you. I've tested this, by the way. Back in the day, we used to, on a product, have two buttons, add to cart or check out through or purchase on Amazon. So we were giving people the choices with some of our most popular products. They could either check out with us or go to Amazon and finish the checkout. And it was like 90-10 for our checkout process. So I understand what you're saying about the two-day. A lot of this kind of thing that you can actually do now with your own website. For example, there's a 3PL called Deliver. So even if I didn't want to have my own warehouse, I could have all my inventory in the Deliver warehouse system. They have 20 warehouses around the country, kind of like a mini Amazon, if you will. And they offer like two-day tags on a Shopify store, a BigCommerce store, even the Walmart platform. So if you want to really expand in these marketplaces, you have this centralized delivery system like Deliver, this huge 3PL that maintains your inventory around the country in such a fashion that you can offer the free two-day delivery badge on Walmart and your own website. So now, you know, people are really given the choice, because let's say they're not familiar with you, but they do a Google search and your product comes up, your website comes up, Amazon's website comes up, Walmart's website comes up. They're going to click on what they're most comfortable with. This is why we've spent the last 10 years training Amazon customers and Walmart customers to move over to our website. And once they get to the website, because we sell consumable, replenishable products. When people buy it, they're going to want to buy it again. Yes. So even though it's a bit of a commodity, it's branded to be quality, great experience, just as good as Amazon, maybe better in some chances. I mean, we don't do same day delivery, right? But you know, they're not paying for a Prime membership either. So they can get the product they want from a brand they trust, a brand that they've maybe been buying from now for over 10 years in some cases, and they continue that relationship. And also, of course, it's the customer service. I think Amazon, they take a lot of heat for their customer service. It's not the best, especially if you're a seller on Amazon. That side of the customer service definitely doesn't win any awards ever. Yeah. So, yeah. But again, you want to be building that website with the idea that if something happens to my Amazon account, or something happens to Amazon, or Amazon says we're not going to allow third-party sellers again or whatever, then you have built a business that's not dependent on a major marketplace. And you have not only that, but you have the mailing list too. As soon as you send that customer from your site over to Amazon, you're not going to be able to capture their email through an order. So building that list has been one of the single best things we've done with a website, because now you can market directly. Every time we send out an email, it's like money falls from the sky. I didn't have to do anything extra to get to those people. They've said, send us your coupons. Let us know what's going on. And that lit, you know, I mean, it's the oldest slogan in the book, the money's in the list. You can't build that list if you're sending people to Amazon, which I think is a huge asset, especially when it comes time to exit that business. Yeah. You know, having that list as an asset that people know it's worth X amount of money every month is huge.
So this is, no, I mean, you have, by the way, I have a very good memory. You know, I capture things that people say, and then I always go back to them. So you mentioned two very valuable things. I want to get back to them. But first, I want to give you how I deal with some of the things that you mentioned that are not necessarily in your best interest. First one being building your own list, and sending them to Amazon does not get you the list. So as you know, when you land on a website, these days, most e-commerce websites have enter your email and get your whatever discount. So what I recommend my clients is you must have something like that on your website, and make sure that the coupon code that you give out is also set up on Amazon for the same percentage. So now the customer comes to the website, that thing pops up, enter your email, get 15% off, 20% off. They'll enter that. You've got their email list, email address for starters. So now they go to checkout. They're going to use it. And again, in your disclosure, you say your checkout will be completed. Use your coupon code. Now you have your email, their email address, and they are getting the discount that they would otherwise get on your website, also on Amazon. So that's how I deal with it. You are completely right about giving up the customer by sending them to Amazon. But if they are coming through you and you've done your homework and then you tied it back to Amazon backend with the coupon codes, then you have the customer. You can always reach out to them. In the case of consumable, it only makes sense for you to have your own, you know, your own operation for the recurring orders. I would still say, unless you use a service like Deliver, I would not bother, because you don't want to be in fulfillment and customer service business, because that's the part that you as an entrepreneur starting a business will have the hardest time to scale. You're going to take 80% of your time in this operation with pick, pack, ship, customer service problems. It's the lowest value of what you can get out of it. That's my what I would advocate. But if you are using Deliver, absolutely, then it would be a very good combination.
You know, I got into the habit of, I got my first warehouse in March 2002 and have had one pretty much ever since. But that's not how I teach people to do the business, you know. I've had a lot of benefits from having the warehouse. But again, to your point, yeah, if you can avoid having a warehouse, that's the way to go. Yes. You might have to change 3PLs every now and then, or, yes, you know, or this, that, and the other thing. But, you know, I've enjoyed having it. I've monetized it in several different ways. But at the same time, you know, when people find out I have a warehouse, they're like, oh, do I have to have a warehouse to sell on Amazon? I'm like, no, you don't.
Actually, you don't want to have a warehouse.
You don't want to have a warehouse, right?
All right. So let's go back to the things that you said that I wanted to get back to. Okay. You very nicely phrased, we train our customers to come to our website, Amazon customers. So how the hell do you train them? I mean, do you invite them to your mastermind?
Well,
Amazon does not like that. They don't want that. So
they don't like it with the wholesale model. If you're not the brand owner, then they don't want you using inserts. They don't want you doing anything. If you own the brand, then you control what the packaging looks like. And we'll have things on our packaging, like a QR code for instructions on how to use the item. We'll have an invitation. Well, our website, I think, is on our packaging in three different locations. So even if you're not saying go to the website, I mean, the URL is all over the packaging, right? But the QR code is what's actually worked the best, because people will come to the website to get more detailed information about how to properly use the product, because you can't put everything on the packaging instruction-wise. Especially, we have 600 different SKUs, and all of the instructions are different for each SKU, but the packaging tends to be pretty generic. Now, when people come to the website, to your point, we've tried everything and to capture the email, right, from that Amazon purchaser coming to our website. What we found works the best is the little, have you seen these things where you like spin the wheel and win a prize? But in order to spin the wheel, you have to enter your name and email first. Yeah. Yeah, then they spin the wheel, and that's how they're getting their coupon code. We found that actually will get you much more response to get someone to give you their email.
This is on the website.
It's on the website, yeah. Okay. And it pops up after a short while, or if there's any kind of exit intention, then it'll, hey, you know, would you like to spin the wheel? And, you know, one of them's like 90% off, you know, but you can put whatever you want on there as prizes. And for some reason, people like spinning that wheel, and it's allowed us to build huge email lists, especially based on a percentage of people coming to that site. And then, of course, once they've redeemed that coupon, now you have their email and can send them specials and information, and, you know, just nurture that relationship. Incredibly, almost impossible to do on Amazon, but it's the packaging. You know, and as a manufacturer, we can also include inserts in our packaging that are 100% promotional to our website and discounts and everything like that. As the brand, you can do that. As a 3PL seller of other name brands, you cannot.
Okay, so this is a very sophisticated way to do things. So for the listeners' benefit, I want to really lay this out, because you just laid out a workflow, so to speak. So what you are saying is, first of all, in your packaging, make sure that you put your website address.
At a minimum.
Nobody can say anything. It's part of your package.
Correct.
In addition, use an insert, and then in the insert, use a QR code and provide a legitimate reason for that QR code to be used. So, and that QR code will put them on your website, on a web page, on your website, right?
Correct.
And provide value there.
Exactly.
Then, like, for example, you could have a few videos about unpacking the product, using the product, first use, replenishment if it's a recurring situation, consumable item, and all that stuff. You can put a bunch of videos there. And then as they are looking at that stuff, pop comes the wheel.
Exactly. And here comes the ask.
Yes. And they put their email address. You've got their email at that point.
And they just got a coupon code instantly. Yeah. Yes.
And then if they use it, fine. If they don't, you still have the email. And at some point they will use it.
Well, we give people, it's a 30-minute expiration. We tell them this coupon code expires in 30 minutes. So,
okay.
So we got a little fear of missing out and a little sense of urgency, and it's real.
Have you tested with time, without time?
No, we've always had the expiration, and we've been happy with how that works. Because here's the thing, too. You don't always want to be rewarding your visitors with discounts. If they get used to unlimited discounts or the expectation of discounts, they're literally going to get mad if they have to check out without a discount. You know, yeah. So you don't want to be getting the kind of programming into your customer that, oh, wait a minute, I should have a discount code. And then they have their stuff in the cart and they're contacting the live chat saying, I need a discount code. I'm about to check out. You know, that's not the behavior that you want to set up. you know, the discount codes are special. So yeah, it expires in 30 minutes.
I see. Okay. That's really smart. So of course, at that point, you know, you've got everything, and then they just become part of your remarketing or retargeting effort, so to speak, with your offers and anything else.
Right. One of the things I do is I subscribe to all of my competitors' email lists. I get on everybody's list that's I consider a competitor. This way I can do the market research on when are they emailing? How often are they emailing? What are they emailing about? How often they put out a discount code? And I take all of that information and I come up with my own marketing plan. And we use a service called Klaviyo. I don't know if you're familiar with
Email marketing.
It's amazing, amazing program. Because not only will they do the things like through artificial intelligence, they'll do the cart abandonment emails, and they'll identify these people as here's your best customers, here's somebody on the cusp, you know, and you may have already churned these customers, and you can do different campaigns. So having that kind of a system, doing all of that extra work for you is less thinking you have to do. And it's not expensive.
No. It's, with all these platforms, you know, it's about how you use it. It's just like anything else. The tools are great. But first of all, most people sign up for it. It's like, you know, almost like gym membership. You know, people sign up for gym membership on the first of the year, and they already feel like they lost 2 pounds already. But these tools are the same. You know, they give free trials and everything, but it's how you're using it is what matters. So
right,
that's where you really need to get up to speed. So this is really smart, Todd. You shared really valuable information. So tell me again, your mastermind. I've never heard mastermind like this. I've heard all these different mastermind classes. Tell me again where people can reach that.
People can go to createprofits.online, and they can read about what our mastermind is all about and even try it out for free for a couple of weeks. And what I learned a long time ago is if you don't want to be beating your head against the wall, trying to reinvent the wheel, you should be hanging out with like-minded people who have actually accomplished what you're trying to accomplish, right? So over the years, I've found myself moving from one mastermind to the next mastermind to the next, because I'm constantly trying to improve myself and my business skills. And I find that you do need to move on every now and then. So we wanted to offer a place, a safe place for people that were just getting started in learning how to make money online, or maybe even if they've been selling on Amazon for a while, to be able to come and ask questions and know that they're going to get good information. And if somebody doesn't know, they're going to say, I don't know, but let's find out together. And plus, we explore all of the different ways to make money online that I've had experience with or am currently doing myself. Because again, it's not just diversification within a business vertical, but it's diversification of verticals. So once we get something up and running and profitable and outsourced enough, I can turn my attention to another project. And so I actually have 6 different online income streams right now. So if people aren't, maybe it's not Amazon they're interested in, they want to know, you know, how to do, you know, KDP or print on demand or affiliate marketing or any of these other things, this group is a good group to come in and get good answers and good direction and consulting along the way.
So a long time ago, somebody told me one of the best ways to learn something is to teach it.
True. Right? This is why I was a flight instructor when I was a pilot. You know, you want to learn how to fly a plane, become a flight instructor, right?
Well, that sounds a little dangerous.
It was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, for you, yeah. All right, cool. So this is great. I mean, I typically don't bring up, tell us this, tell us that as far as something that you are looking to promote, so to speak. But I mean, what you shared here is really valuable stuff, and it's so specific, actionable, people can implement it, and with huge return. So obviously you have a lot more of it where you have the masterclass. So that's why I wanted people to hear it. So let's move on to some of the other topics. So you are obviously advocating Amazon and your website. So for new sellers or wannabe sellers or planning stages, FBA versus FBM, which one do you favor the most?
Well, I favor FBA the most, but having said that, I do tell people to start with at least prepping stuff themselves, right? So have your first few orders delivered to your home if you can, or a place where you have a little space, and do the inspection, do the prep, create the shipping plan yourself, and send it off to FBA so you can understand those processes. And also the inspection is the single biggest thing. I can't tell you how many times a manufacturer or distributor, whoever, sends product that ends up either damaged when it left their facility or got damaged en route. And this is why when people say, well, why don't you just have everything sent direct to Amazon? That's the one single reason, because the things that show up damaged or broken boxes or crunched corners at Amazon all end up in your unfulfillable. And a lot of times they'll just look at the delivery and they won't take out the good ones. They'll just say, oh, that's all unfulfillable. Now you're shipping it right back to yourself to do what you should have done in the first place. So I think you should have your eyes on it or send it to a 3PL and pay somebody's eyes, you know, to do that inspection. Never go direct to Amazon. But I also think between FBM and FBA, if you're going to do FBA, you should stick with FBA, which means you're not going to be selling products that you would want to sell FBM. I think the only time you should be doing FBM is when, let's say you're not approved for a hazmat, but you want to sell fragrances. You can make a lot of money selling fragrances, but you're going to be fulfilling those yourself because you're not hazmat approved. And even worse, maybe you have no flammable storage given to you at Amazon, so you would have no choice. Very profitable, can make a lot of money. There's a lot of inventory available still, but you're going to be doing that shipping yourself, right? FBM and selling FBM. The other things, if you want to do FBM, perfectly fine, are things that aren't going to be profitable at FBA because of the fees, maybe the size, the weight, things like that. Another option would be drop shipping. Now, I absolutely hate drop shipping the way people are talking about it and suggesting it should be done. A true job, the drop shipping that's allowed on Amazon is when you have that relationship with the brand and they've agreed to ship under your name a product to the consumer. And the things that I would say that you should drop ship are heavy, expensive items.
Right.
We did these solar heated horse water troughs once. You know, they weigh 400 pounds each. You know?
Oh, my God.
That's a drop ship opportunity. I mean, we were making $700 a sale by selling it.
How many of those do you, I mean, you can't be getting many orders every day, no?
No, it's not a high volume item. But again, you're selling it on Amazon. You have the listing on eBay. And you have your own website. We actually set up a website that had a keyword specific name like heatedhorsewater.com, right? And let me tell you, there was enough search volume for people looking for the really good solar powered heated horse water troughs that we were selling 20, 30 a month, and they were never saw one. I never touched one in my entire life. It was always being shipped.
You probably
from,
don't want to either.
No, I mean, you know. But the returns on those are almost zero also, you know? So I think, yeah, FBA obviously has huge attraction, but at the same time, once you're comfortable and you know what you're doing, you can make a lot of money with the FBM side of things also, and not FBMing things that you could FBA. FBM, it has its own reason for existence, in my opinion, and it's not to be another seller on an FBA listing.
Yeah. So a couple of things you mentioned, I want to give you another angle. So first of all, I totally on the same page. FBA, you don't want to bother with FBM. Why would you want to carry inventory, and why would you want to risk another set of metrics, seller performance metrics by Amazon, to be tracked on time delivery, late ship, and all those things you don't want to get into. So therefore, stick to FBA as much as possible. One legitimate reason that I've seen for an FBM listing is during the busy times, Amazon takes time receiving your FBA shipments into stock. So you never want to be out of stock. So it's a good idea to have an FBA and a FBA listing as your main listing, and also create an FBM listing. And that will always be unavailable. But if you are about to run out of stock and Amazon is late in receiving that FBA shipment, you can activate that and continue the sales.
So 1,000%.
Until Amazon is ready with the new inventory. That's the only legitimate reason. I don't like drop shipping either. However, what I like with your idea is these heavy items with one extra thing to add to that plan. To be very careful with your fulfillment latency parameter. So as you know, on every listing, most people don't really pay attention to it, especially if it's FBA, it's a non-issue. But basically, I'm sure people have seen, for the listeners' benefit, some listings that are not prime listings, they will say, this item ships in 2 to 3 days. That is coming from a field in your item field that's called fulfillment latency. If you are drop shipping it, you have no control over when the supplier is going to ship it, as much as you would have control over your own inventory. Since this is coming from somewhere else, I say play it safe. Have some kind of a service level agreement with the supplier. Make sure that they will ship everything in, let's say, 3 days, and then put 4 or 5 days as your latency. So that way you don't get hit on the late shipment rate.
1,000%.
That's going to kill you, right?
You know, it's a 4% order defect rate. So if you're only doing 10 shipments a month FBM, you have one late shipment. That's 10% right. ODR right there. And you're just opening your account up to be damaged. Now,
there is one more detail, but as you know, Amazon is the world of details and they all make a big difference. So let's assume that either you or your supplier shipped an order and you shipped it on the 15th. And let's say the latest shipment date was the 15th. But the minute an order hits the Amazon system, it will assign a ship by date to the minute. If you are 1 minute late, it's going to be categorized as late shipment. 1 minute is enough because it's all mathematical. They're checking. Now, let's say that you shipped it on the 15th, and let's say that it was 6 p.m. for the sake of argument, and you shipped it on, you issued the shipping label at 2 p.m. on the 15th. You think you're good to go? You're not, because if you submit the shipping data, either because you are submitting a CSV file, and you said, okay, I'll do it tomorrow. It's shipped anyway. And then you submit the shipping data with the shipment date of 15th. Or for whatever reason, data is submitted through the API and Amazon API timed out and stuff didn't get submitted. Amazon will take your shipment date as the date and time your shipment data was submitted, not the actual physical shipment date. And your shipments will be tagged late.
Yeah, I've stepped in all of these potholes for sure.
Yeah, I see.
Hey, one thing interesting is, you're right. On the shipping thing, it is to the minute. And this is why, you know, the FBM shipments that we do have to send out, our people are trained to know it's not just the day it has to ship by, watch the time. Because it could be 10 in the morning that thing has to be out. And if you're not thinking of shipping it until 11, we're going to get dinged. So they all know about that. The kind of the neat thing is you're talking about the latency.
Yeah.
It used to be that you controlled that 100%. You would set what you wanted the latency to be. There, to your point, there's a setting on every single product, and that would be the latency. Amazon now, because they're able to track how fast you're submitting the tracking and how quickly it's getting delivered to the customer, they're starting to adjust those latencies down on your behalf. They're Yeah. They'll send you an email saying, hey, I know you have a latency of 7, you know, on this item, but our historical data shows that you've been delivering it with a latency of 2. So we're going to drop your latency down to 2 so that the buyer sees a faster delivery time, which is to your benefit. And I scratched my head over that one for a long time, because now I'm like, well, what if the latency is 3? What if we get one out at that's 3? And it turns out that they don't penalize you if they've dropped the latency. But what they're always trying to do is improve that buyer customer experience. And they think the customer will be happier to see a faster delivery time. So now they're controlling the latency if you can prove you're shipping it faster than what you've asked for.
You know, I've never heard this before, but it's unbelievable. You know, this is the biggest hypocrisy in my book, because Amazon says, oh, you know, under promise, over deliver. So what happens? Oh, you will hear from us in 24 hours, and bang, you get a response in 2 hours. Why? Now you are happy. Why? Because they said 24 hours. So you're doing the same thing and say, no. We're going to say on your behalf.
I know. It's like it's always a different set of rules for the seller, you know, than Amazon themselves even. But that's the joy of Amazon, you know.
Yeah. So, Todd, I want you to describe to me how to structure a winning team. What's the structure of a team to be successful on Amazon, roles and responsibilities? And tell us what you outsource in that mix and what you must do yourself in-house.
Sure. You know, in March 2002, when I started selling online, I literally was sitting on a forklift for the very first time in my empty warehouse, waiting for the first truckload of stuff to show up. And I did everything myself, but I was numbers driven. So I literally had a plan that said, when we have X amount of profit, I'm hiring a shipping clerk. Right. And so my real plan was, when I wanted to reach my 7-figure income goal, I wanted to have the business 99% insourced or outsourced, insourced employees, outsourced virtual or contracted employees. Mm-hmm. And we achieved that in 2014. So it took a while, the 1% that I do with the business now is mainly reviewing the financials and the numbers and whatnot. So I have everything insourced or outsourced, from product research, purchasing, bookkeeping, fulfillment, customer service, everything. Everything is insourced or outsourced. Now we're running about 15% insourced now and 85% outsourced. Is it possible to go 100% outsourced? Yeah, if you don't have the warehouse, yeah. All of my insourced people right now work in the warehouse and do the warehouse tasks, the FBM shipping, the receiving, and FBA prep that we're doing. So some of that I could still outsource. But every time I've tried to outsource the FBA prep part of things, I've just been disappointed, either from the level of service that I've been given by the prep facility or the ultimate cost per unit. And so that's the one thing the warehouse has kind of allowed me to do, is control that top end overhead. And as long as I'm doing enough units, right, I'm going to have a lower per unit prep cost and inventory handling cost than dealing with an outside thing. So that's the only thing I have going for me, but I still don't, that's not enough reason to enter into long-term lease, hire employees, get insurance and workers' comp and all of the equipment, right? Racking and everything like that, forklift, pallet stackers, I mean, you name it. And so the business right now pretty well runs itself, except for the financial end of things. You know, do we want to take that Amazon lending offer that was just given to us? Will we be able to spend it fast enough on inventory? You know, how are we doing with our inventory asset value? Is it too high? Or, you know, what are our turns at Amazon? So those are the kinds of things that I'm looking at on a regular basis. But I haven't packed a box in I don't know how long now. So. Yeah.
And as far as building content, looking at Amazon Analytics, or are they different people doing things?
Sure. We, you know, we have outsourced our PPC, for example. So if you want to increase sales, whether it's wholesale or your own brand, private label, you really should get an expert in those kinds of things. So you can hire someone to do your PPC. You can hire people to do your on-page optimization, product photography, videos, descriptions, bullet points, all that kind of thing can be outsourced. You can, did I answer the question or did I miss part of it?
Yeah. No, it's you answered the content part. So that part you say outsource. And plus, you know, you're doing it once. You constantly optimize, but you do it once as front loaded. How about the Amazon, checking the Amazon analytics, like conversion rates and traffic and all that stuff? Who does that?
I do that. All of that comes to me. And, you know, the reports are actually pretty straightforward. We have a couple of pieces of software that we subscribe to just to double check, kind of triple check everything to see. Wow, this one says, you know, that we have X margin overall. This one says it's different. You know, why is it a big deal? Things like that. I'm still the numbers person and all of those kinds of decisions that I make. But we have software that does that will tell us like what to order, when to order, and who to order it from, even if we have three or four suppliers. That's all automated. And even our content stuff, like every description that we've ever done for an Amazon product, one of our own, is all AI. It's all done through software that we just feed it keywords and it knocks out a beautiful product description. And same thing with the articles that we put on our website or the blog part of things. Everything that was computer generated and is the way these things have advanced even over the last year blows my mind. Yeah. It's crazy. I know copywriters hate hearing it. They think it's a lazy,
of course. Yeah.
You know.
So, Todd, this is great. You shared a lot of very valuable information. So let's get to know you a little bit. So tell us, I take you way back to where you grew up. So tell us, where did you grow up?
I grew up in southeastern Michigan. I call it the ghetto part of Farmington Hills. We were like lower middle class. And my dad, he was a bank examiner for the state of Michigan, but he didn't make a lot of money. I mean, I heard all the time, we can't afford that. We can't afford that. We're not rich, you know. And then I also heard a lot of, you don't deserve that. You know,
well, you can't have it. We're not rich is one thing, but no, you don't deserve it is a whole different thing. So do you have any siblings?
An older sister and a younger brother.
And were they told the same thing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And again, my dad was a raging alcoholic, but he was a functional alcoholic. So he did his job well enough, just to the point where they were about to fire him, and then he got out on disability. But my dad was a rule breaker and a corner cutter and a raging alcoholic. So, I mean, this was the role model I had grown up. So all this time, you know, this is how I'm seeing my dad act, right? And it just was an environment that I knew was dysfunctional as early as age 12, you know? And I just wanted to get out of that house. So that's why I ended up joining the Air Force when I was 17. I graduated high school early, just had to get out of that house. And that was the way I decided to do it.
Wow. And I heard you earlier mention that in 2002, you had a plan to have seven-figure income. So was that because of that during your upbringing? Was we don't have money, we're not rich, you can't have it. You know, is that, do you think that kind of built up this desire to have kind of financial freedom?
I wanted that as soon as I got out of the Air Force and had my first real job as a commercial pilot. And again, I was making $28,000 a year you know, dodging thunderstorms and tornadoes. And I said, there's got to be a better way. And so I knew I wanted to do something on my own. Unfortunately, and a lot of people, I mean, they may not gel with this, but that upbringing I had all of this negative programming in my head that was telling me I wasn't good enough. I didn't deserve it. I should be happy with what I have. And even when I quit my job as a commercial pilot to go all in my business, my own family was telling me I was acting irresponsible. And I don't mean my close family, but I mean, you know, mostly in-laws. So it was mostly the in-laws. You know, I had two young girls at the time and they're like, think of your kids. Think of your kids. Stop acting irresponsible. Like I am thinking of my kids.
How about your wife?
Risking my life for $28,000 a year.
You know? How about your wife? Did she support you?
She did in a lot of ways, but in some ways she didn't. She just wanted me to be a 9-to-5 guy. I could have worked at the gas station making minimum wage, come home at 5 o'clock, and then spend the time with the family. That's what she wanted, right? So while she was supportive, there was still always the evil eye. If I was on the computer, you know, too long or working till 2 in the morning, you know, online trying to get things going.
So that puts such a sense of guilt on you, doesn't it?
Oh, it's terrible. You know, everybody yells at you about balance. You have to have a work-life balance. What you really need is you need the people around you to agree what the balance is, not what they think it is. You know, you just can't have one person in the relationship say, this is what the balance is going to be. So, well, that's not the balance we need to accomplish these goals, right? So, so basically, I had a lot of success early on, which I'm going to say right now was probably the worst thing that could have happened to me. Because as I'm having all of this success, deep down, I'm like, I don't deserve it. And I would do a lot of self-sabotage. I would take risks that a lot of people normally wouldn't take that would unfortunately pay off, that just reinforced more risk-taking, right? So it wasn't until I actually had a nuclear disaster of a business failure and ended up $2.2 million in debt that I finally feel cleansed, if you will, and free, and I could go and restart over. And that's what happened in, it was actually March, the business failure was in February of 2002. It was March of 2002 that I decided I was going to start selling on eBay and just start over. The reason I had the 7-figure goal, to answer your earlier question, is that I was $2.2 million in debt. So I had no choice.
Necessity.
So, I mean, here's a guy who my very first purchase, that truckload I was waiting for, was 26 pallets of customer returned goods from Sam's Club. And I'm sitting on my forklift waiting for that truck to show up, not knowing if I'd have made a huge mistake or if this was the beginning of something good. But my mind was finally in the right place, you know, having that reset button pushed for me kind of reset my brain also. And I said, you know what, we're going to start over. We're going to do it the right way. And I did $1.1 million in the first year on eBay. And then it just kept growing from there. And I found Amazon in 2009, you know. And, you know, we're pushing $200 million now in Amazon revenue since we started. So it's just been crazy. So I wouldn't wish what I went through on anybody. If someone said, you know, hey, how do you make $100 million online? Well, make 50, lose it, and then make another 50. You know, I wouldn't suggest that to anybody. You know? But it worked for me. So
it's like they asked this guy, you know, how did you get so rich? He says, well, I just started picking up dirty laundry for people and taking them to the laundry place. And then I bought a bicycle I could carry more. Then I bought a motorcycle. Then I bought a little truck. And so your wealth came from having a fleet of... No. Then I met my now current wife, and her father owned the factory, and I became the manager of the factory.
Yeah, I married rich.
So your transition, how do you make out? So make 50, lose it.
I love the joke that says, if you're self-employed, you only have to work half days, but you get to pick which 12 hours. I think that one kind of drives a point home also.
Yeah. So it must feel good for you to now have this success and show it to the people, right? So that must be.
Everybody wanted to know, what are you working so hard for? You know, because especially when we started getting back to the seven-figure, you know, annual paydays and all that. And what I really wanted was my time. And that's why the goal was to get 100% outsourced through insourcing and outsourcing. Because the being able to control your own schedule, I think, is when you're finally successful. And I don't even know if people like Elon Musk have that. His schedule's got to be crazy. And I can't believe he controls it the way I can.
Yeah.
I want to spend some time, you know, talking to Nick on his podcast. That's my decision. I spend my time doing that. You know, when we're done here, I have nothing scheduled for the rest of the day. So my wife and I are going to go out and enjoy this beautiful fall day. You know, might go to the cider mill. I don't know. But when you control your own time, you decide what you're going to put it into. And if you've automated a business that allows you to do that, I think you're successful, no matter how much money it's making you.
Yeah. So. Time is the most valuable commodity. And if you are in charge of it, you are in charge of your wealth. So it's a big deal. Thank you, Todd. This was great. You shared a lot. And this was very valuable. So share with us your contact information. How can people reach out?
The best way is to go to createprofits.online, because all of the interacting I do with people is inside that mastermind, you know, and those are the people I give my attention to and that I love helping. I don't really have any other place that I'm hanging out right now other than there.
Great. Thank you, Todd. This was excellent conversation.
Thanks, Nick. It was my privilege again. Thank you.
Thank you. And this brings us to the end of another episode, and I'll see you on the next one.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. Be sure and subscribe, rate, and review our show. And be sure and share an episode with a friend. And thank you so much for being with us today. We'll see you next week here on Amazon Legends.